The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we'll start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the headline, Care and Share. Individuals and companies take home the annual prize for giving. And that's the headline for a special award section. With a second headline inside the Triangle Business Journal, Corporate Philanthropy. The Triangle is packed with individuals and companies who go beyond the call of duty to serve. Here's a look at those who stood out this year. And as there's quite a few listed, we'll read one from each category, the nonprofits category, companies category, and individuals category. The first company listed is Advance Auto Parts, CEO Tom Greco, headquarters Raleigh. List your company's charitable activities in the past year. Our company sponsored giving and gifting via our Advance Auto Parts Foundation Center around three focus areas: military veterans, community health, and education job readiness. In the Triangle, this includes support of nonprofits, including Advance Community Health, Veterans Bridge Home, and Wake Technical Community College, among others. Importantly, our team members get involved by fundraising on behalf of the American Heart Association, volunteering in the community, and or identifying local nonprofits that will benefit from our gifts. Why is it important that companies partner with local philanthropic organizations? We recognize it's not just the public sector that can help to make lives better for individuals and families. The private sector must also step up and do its share. What do you see as your company's change in strategy during the post-pandemic environment? The past year has been difficult as economic pressures continue to grow and the nation's healthcare system faces ongoing challenges from the COVID epidemic, staffing shortages, and access for an underserved population, both civilian and military. Despite these challenges, we are resolute in our strategy of supporting nonprofits in the areas of military veterans, community health, and education job readiness. Should federal and state governments offer companies more incentives to raise total charitable contributions? Cooperation between the public and private sector is as important as ever, and federal and state incentives can help to create an environment where corporations are better able to support the work of nonprofits that are helping the most vulnerable among us. What are the total cash contributions by your company to promote and support charitable organizations in the past year? Advance Auto Parts Foundation and Advance Auto Parts gifted over $4.2 million to a variety of nonprofits, including American Heart Association, Building Homes for Heroes, Hire Heroes USA, Stop Soldier Suicide, and Advance Community Health, among others. Importantly, we embarked on a first-of-its-kind recruitment initiative with Wake Tech Community College aimed at increasing student diversity in the school's automotive systems technology and collision repair programs. And in the nonprofits category, we have CASA, headquarters Raleigh, CEO Everett McElveen. Description, affordable housing developer and property manager. What was your biggest accomplishment in the past year? CASA provided affordable rental housing to 524 Triangle residents over the past year. We measure success by the stability of our residents, most of whom experienced or were at risk of homelessness. CASA qualifies applicants with incomes below what the conventional market will approve, and we say yes to people and families with previous evictions, poor or little credit, and other barriers. Last year, 82% of residents reported an increase in their quality of life. What is your biggest opportunity? Increasing the number of affordable apartments in the Triangle. With nearly 200 apartments in pre-development, we're poised to meet our strategic goal to add 500 more apartments by 2025. CASA is currently developing 100 apartments at Kings Ridge in Raleigh, 48 in Chapel Hill in Carrboro, 16 in Durham. We're seeking land and buildings to continue developing and preserving affordable rental housing across the Triangle. Should nonprofits receive more government, financial, tax assistance? CASA is pleased to work in partnership with local municipalities, counties, state, and federal governments to develop affordable housing. These partnerships are critical to mitigate the loss of affordable units in a rapidly growing area like the Triangle. While neither government nor the community can solve homelessness alone, we believe public-private partnerships are the best model for addressing the housing crisis and reaching the hardest to house. What is your biggest charity event of the year? CASA's 30th anniversary fundraiser was held in September 2022 and raised $157,602 for our Housing Solution Fund, which covers housing costs that exceed what our residents can afford to pay. Proceeds go directly to costs similar to any landlord, including mortgages, insurance, routine and emergency maintenance, groundskeeping, pest control, etc. What percentage of money raised should go into the program services? While for many years healthy nonprofits could show program costs for 85 to 88% of the annual expense, the standard is changing. Investments in administrative, management, HR, and overhead are more costly today and are also indicative of the overall health of a nonprofit. It is now not uncommon for well-rounded nonprofits to spend 20-25% of the budget on admin overhead costs and 75 to 80% for programs. Who was a game changer for you last year? CASA is proud to be one of the Bank of America Neighborhood Builders Award recipients, which came with a $200,000 award and a year of professional development for our CEO and an emerging leader. Bank of America also contributed $500,000 to the capital campaign for Kings Ridge. Bank of America's local staff are active, dedicated volunteers and advocates for CASA and the creation of affordable housing in our community. And in the individual category, we have Danny Rosen, title, co-founder, Brand Fuel, and Band Together. Residence, Raleigh, company, Brand Fuel, / Band Together. Who went above and beyond for philanthropy in the Triangle? Chuck Recor envisioned investing in the higher education of nonprofit leaders, both executive directors and board directors. He created the Harvard 100, an organization dedicated to making the Triangle the strongest nonprofit community in the world. He recognized that human capital is our number one asset. Through his vision, he has supported over 100 Triangle nonprofit leaders through higher education at Harvard University. The impact of the Triangle is incredible. Who do you look up to for guidance? My wife, Nicole, and business partner, Robert Fivish, they have been my grounding forces when I have my head and heart in the clouds. They have provided balance, honest, and often hard to hear, feedback, and helped finesse direction for even better outcomes. I rarely make decisions without their input. While my pathological optimism is often advantageous, I desperately need the balance they provide. Thank you, Nicole and Robert. Where do you see yourself in 5 years from now? In Raleigh, the greatest city on earth, continuing to build Brand Fuel to leave a legacy beyond profit and doing it through the guardrails of our B Corporation certification. I plan to be invested in open source, collaborative nonprofits like Band Together to continue to help those in need in our region. I also hope my wife and I are traveling more, visiting our daughters in college, and celebrating their accomplishments. What is on your wish list for philanthropy in the next year? I want philanthropy and marketing to have a baby. There are powerful opportunities for corporate marketing departments to invest in social impacts aligned with their brands. You Buy, We Give is a nice campaign, yet the real investment should be longer term through employee volunteerism, CSR strategy, and measurable community impact. Marketing is about participation, not promotion, and participating in the work of the crucial nonprofit sector can enhance corporate talent recruitment and bottom lines. What could the Triangle business community do to further support philanthropy? Rather than put more pressure on business community, I would flip this question a bit. I would urge nonprofits to do research on how they can help companies reach their goals through investment in nonprofits. Nonprofits can help companies grow through employee engagement, through volunteerism, recruitment and retention programs, CSR strategy, education, and collaborative marketing opportunities. Find out what a company's love language is and then deliver programs and ideas that align. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by Managing Editor Dane Huffman. ABC stores expect big month. Just in time for the holiday-induced booze rush, the Orange County ABC Board has opened a new retail store in Chapel Hill. The new ABC store is located at 300 Market Street in the town's walkable neighborhood of Southern Village. The store fills a 3,400 square foot space near the Southern Village Pharmacy and Village Pediatrics of Chapel Hill. The store opening comes right as the holiday season is picking up, a historically busy time for ABC stores and one that exploded during the pandemic. Last December, Orange County ABC stores saw just over $3 million in retail sales. That compares to $2.3 million in December 2019 and $3 million in December 2020. Last December, Wake County ABC stores brought in the highest sales figure in the state with $20.28 million recorded. That was more than the $15.2 million in 2019 and $20.2 million in December 2020. The trend is the same in Durham County, where sales have steadily risen from $3.9 million in December 2019 to $5 million in December 2020 and $5.4 million in December 2021. What's interesting is that overall, sales in October 2022 were 4.32% higher than October 2021. The new Chapel Hill location marks the ninth ABC store for Orange County. Pickett Sprouse Brokers, Mark N. O'Neill and Emily Collins represented the Orange County ABC board in leasing the space. The team negotiated a long-term lease with improvements with Southern Village developer D.R. Bryan. We all agree that the new ABC store would energize that block of retail in Southern Village while also offering high visibility for the new look and feel of the Orange County ABC brand, Collins says, and especially so with the holidays ahead. Driving force behind Wolf Speed Remembered. A homegrown product whose brilliance led to the rise of Wolf Speed has died at the age of 62. John Palmore was the chief technology officer who helped found Wolf Speed, formerly Cree, at NC State University in 1987. He spent his entire career at the Durham-based semiconductor company. He really enjoyed the work, recalls former CEO Neil Hunter. His father, Hain Palmore, earned a doctorate degree in mineral industries at NC State in 1961 and was a longtime member of the school faculty. John Palmore himself authored more than 380 scientific publications and had more than 80 U.S. patents in the areas of processing and device designs for silicon carbide and gallium nitride electronic devices. John was so brilliant, Hunter says. Palmore died November 13 of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. He was 62. Raleigh Park has new name as plans progress. While the rise of Dix Park has consumed attention in Raleigh, another park across downtown could reemerge as a key oasis as the city heads toward an urban future. The dilapidated former home of the Devereaux Meadow Baseball Stadium is set for renewal, and the city council moved in that direction November 15 when it named the location Smoky Hollow Park. The name memorializes a once working-class area along Peace Street and moves away from the Devereaux family, a prominent 19th century family with ties to the Confederacy. We have to make sure that we tell the story about why this was named what it was, Mayor Marianne Baldwin said at the council meeting. The stadium dated to 1940, but was always a rickety structure that lacked the charm of its Durham rival. Now the prime location is set for new life. While plans are still unfolding, the idea is to demolish the current buildings, restore the Pigeon House branch stream, and create more natural space. And that's going to be vital as more towers rise in the future. Triangle hopes for shot in the future. The Triangle's bid for a major sporting event has fallen short for now. On November 12, the International University Sports Federation awarded the 2027 Games to Chungcheong, South Korea over North Carolina. The Triangle hosted the U.S. Olympic Festival in 1987, and it drew 4,000 athletes and 464,000 fans. But the University Games would bring in 10,000 athletes and 600,000 fans. The Games are held every 2 years, and the Federation's Leon Eder noted, "We would be delighted to have North Carolina as a host sometime." Hill Caro, who led the Olympic Festival effort and is leading the University Games bid, says, "The good news is that it's not over till it's over." Another out-of-state firm dives into the Triangle. A Baltimore-based commercial real estate developer has expanded into the state with a new office in Raleigh. St. John's Properties has opened a temporary location until it can find a permanent office space, with Dustin Atkielski, the office leader, as a regional partner. He says that while the company wants to look at a variety of uses, commercial real estate will be a big driver. St. John's Properties typically develops flex office space, which Atkilski said fits perfectly with the Triangle's recent life sciences development boom. The company is looking for land acquisition opportunities to develop ground-up Class A commercial office, retail, warehouse, and flex space. Atkilski says the company is unsure how many staffers will work in the Raleigh office, but it could be anywhere from 2 to 20 employees. And finally, Pikeville gets control back. Pikeville, located in between Wilson and Goldsboro in Wayne County, has control of its finances again. The town of about 700 people was, quote, once considered among the most financially troubled government units in North Carolina, unquote. That's according to the local government finance division. But on December 6th, the LGC will suggest relinquishing control of the town's finances. The state took control in April 2021 after Pikeville faced missing five payments, totaling $158,000 in debt. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to our continuing series, 52 Shades of Success, Earth and Equity. The headline, Tactical Commitments. Murphy's Natural CEO says investing in the planet and its people is mission critical. Story by Connie Gentry. About this project, the Earth and Equity Project explores the growing awareness, actions, and accountability of businesses and leaders who face opportunities and challenges relating to environmental, social, and governance, ESG, issues. The 52-week project will highlight what selected companies and Triangle executives are doing to address climate change, diversity, equity, inclusion, and ways to maneuver the new world of corporate responsibilities. The year 2024 is when Murphy's Naturals expects to be profitable again. The fact that the certified B Corporation went from profitable in its first 2 years to not profitable is not a problem. Philip Freeman will tell you it's all part of the plan to position the company for sustained growth, 35 to 40% year-over-year gains for the next 8 years. We've built ahead, built the team, the expertise, and the facility ahead of volume, so we're positioned for the larger retail accounts that we're taking on, says Freeman, who grew his company from selling on Amazon in 2013 to wholesaling into independent stores the following year to shelf space in national retailers including Target, Ace Hardware, and Sprouts. This coming year will be in about 250 Costco locations and will be national with Bass Pro, Whole Foods, and Cabela's, he says. Fueling that growth took every spare cent the company made, plus two rounds of investment, $1 million raised through a seed series in fourth quarter 2019 and a Series A funding last April that yielded $8.5 million. The company says 2021 revenue was more than $9 million. Freeman adds that a lot of that has happened over the last 3 or 4 years. Ramping up to future demand has entailed increasing the full-time staff by 75% since 2020, installing new equipment, and implementing manufacturing processes that drive efficiency. Of the 25 core products at Murphy's Naturals, 19 are manufactured at its facility in Raleigh. From 2020 to 2021, they expanded from 12,000 to 70,000 square feet, and this month they're adding more space to top out at 90,000 square feet. We're in complete control of the quality of product going out the door. We can drive efficiency, and the scale of our operations makes a difference. Those all play into our profitability, says the retired naval officer, who credits the 8 years he spent in the military with preparing him to lead Murphy's Naturals and build the mission-driven brand. He also launched the Loading Dock, co-working and co-warehousing spaces with four locations around Raleigh. The impetus behind Murphy's Naturals was pretty simple. My wife Pam is a mosquito magnet, but she didn't want to use products with DEET, Freeman explains. He identified two critical opportunities that have propelled Murphy's from the garage of their North Raleigh home to seven-figure sales and distribution across the U.S. One was a gap in the marketplace for effective natural mosquito repellents. Secondly, that gap existed because the hefty cost of natural essential oils kept manufacturers from using sufficient amounts in their natural repellents. Most companies kept the cost down by going with low percentages of essential oils. I went the opposite, creating a product with a high percentage of essential oils in a blend that works very well as a mosquito repellent, Freeman says. The company's best-selling products are the lemon eucalyptus oil spray, applied directly to the skin, along with repellent incense sticks and candles. The all-natural products are underscored by the company's unwavering commitment to celebrate nature and inspire positive outcomes. We're committed to giving 2% of our total revenues every year. Even during the hardest years, we've done this, Freeman says. When we've looked at investors, we've made it clear that being a certified B Corporation and giving 2% of revenues is an absolute necessity for us. That means we only bring on investors that are in line with our beliefs. Murphy's Naturals is both a certified B Corporation and a member of 1% for the Planet, global organizations that align corporate missions with earth-friendly and action-oriented nonprofits and causes. Benefit corporations are explicitly committed to a diverse set of stakeholders, placing the value of shareholders, employees, community, environment, and society on equal footing with profits, says Vicki Lee Parker High, Executive Director of North Carolina Business Council, NCBC. One of the goals set forth in NCBC's 2022 agenda was to support legislation that would allow businesses to incorporate as a business corporation. This creates a long-term sustainable value for North Carolina, especially as most benefit corporations are committed to paying their employees a living wage, which strengthens our economy, Parker High says. We work with the state's B Corporation community, which includes 75 companies, to mobilize their voice and educate state legislators about the economic benefits of passing the benefit corporation legislation and joining 35 other states, including South Carolina, Virginia, and Washington, D.C. Freeman agrees it would be a good thing to have, but the certification as a B Corporation, not how a business is registered with the state, is what makes the difference. It's how you are as a company, that the good you do, he says. One of the nice things about being a B Corporation is the validation. It's a rigorous process to attain certification, and renewals are required every 2 years. His biggest conundrum has been addressing the seasonality of mosquito repellents. After selling and processing orders from February through September, there's a third of the year when things go quiet. During that drought, when you don't have revenues but you need to buy all of your ingredients to prepare for the coming year, it's a challenge, Freeman says. Having to order materials in September for products we'll be shipping in March and not getting paid for until April or May, that's a long period of time to bridge. Especially with our accelerated growth, it's been difficult, and that's where the Series A funding was really strategic for us. In 2018, Murphy's launched a secondary brand, Santa's Naturals, with scented candles and hand salve for the holiday season. We have a significant new product development roadmap, Freeman adds. Products that are natural extensions of the current mosquito repellents are high on the list, including products for pets. Murphy's was named for their standard poodle. And sunscreen or products for sunburn and bite relief. Next up, premium products to address customer feedback requesting more stylized products, specifically a stoneware version of the repellent candles. And now we turn to the main news stories in the Triangle Business Journal. North Hills development battle shifts to New Raleigh City Council, written by Kaylee Thompson. The contentious debate over Kane Realty Corporation's development plans in the North Hills Main District is now in the hands of a new Raleigh City Council that could end up hitting the brakes on the city's fast pace of growth. On November 15, in the final meeting of the current City Council following the elections earlier this month, council members voted to defer the developer's rezoning request that would make way for new high-rises in North Hills. The next opportunity for the proposed rezonings to come up for a vote is now December 6, a day after a group of new council members is sworn in. The city council will have four new members who ran on platforms that included putting more scrutiny on developers and giving a larger voice to the community. The council's decision is just the latest delay for developer John Kane, as his company initially filed for rezoning request in 2021. Kane Realty asked for up to 40 stories on two properties along Six Forks Road, up to 30 stories on one lot along Lassiter Mill Road, and up to 12 stories on one lot along Rowan Road at Six Forks Road. Current zoning for the sites, which total 11 acres combined, is commercial mixed use up to 5 and 12 stories. The proposal for the four sites includes ground-level retail with office and or residential space above. New buildings are already rising at the former site of the J.C. Penney. Throughout the process, residents have pushed back against the plans with concerns about traffic and the rising cost of living. Conditions attached to the rezoning include prohibiting certain uses and dedicating a right-of-way for bicycle infrastructure along Six Forks Road and North Hills Main Street. The developer has also said it will set aside space for a transit center and fire station expansion. Since the September council meeting, Kane has worked to adjust the rezoning with more conditions, including limiting building heights to 37 stories. UNC Health expanding in Clayton. UNC Health Johnston is expanding its footprint in Clayton. Johnston Memorial Hospital Authority plans to build a two-story, 26,600-square-foot medical office building along NC Highway 42 in Clayton, located just east of the existing hospital campus, as a UNC Health Johnston spokesperson. Construction is expected to start within the next month. The Johnston Memorial Hospital Authority will then lease the ground floor to UNC Health Rex, which will open a gastroenterology center, says Kyle McDermott, site administrator for UNC Health Johnston in Clayton. The outpatient center will be 7,800 square feet, with two procedure rooms and space for a third. Across the hall, Rex Digestive Healthcare will have 4,000 square feet for its clinical offices. McDermott says the second floor will be shell space until the hospital authority figures out what to do with it. We're excited to offer these services in a safe, efficient outpatient setting with lower out-of-pocket costs for our patients, he says. It's a great example of how we're partnering with UNC Health Rex to improve access to health care in our communities. The facility will have two entrances, one on NC Highway 42 and one on Amelia Church Road. UNC Health Johnston in Clayton opened in October 2009 and has grown through the years. It opened a three-story wing in January 2015. The hospital was built on land that was originally owned by the Penny family. Today, across the street from the hospital, Dean Penny of Craig Davis Properties is developing the Copper District, a 270-acre development that will include housing, retail, and the first Class A office space in Johnston County. And that was written by Evan Hoopfer. Last call at Bayleaf, gated community in northern Wake County, has only four sites left, written by Kaylee Thompson. The last remaining home sites for custom multi-million dollar homes in a northern Wake County community are going up for sale. Bayleaf Farm, a gated custom home community in North Raleigh, is entering its last phase of home building. The final four home sites are up for sale and being handled by Pocket Listing. The sites are each on approximately 2-acre lots and are near the front of the community. The homes that buyers build must be at least 7,000 square feet. The homes start at $3 million and will be built by Cary-based Bost Custom Homes. Bost works with the buyers to custom design and build every single aspect of the home, including outdoor living spaces. Kristen Spruill, Director of New Development Sales with Pocket Listing, says home construction timelines can vary depending on the client's needs. It generally takes about 2 months to complete the design process and then another 12 months after that to complete construction. Bayleaf was started in the early 2000s and has a total of 25 home sites, with 21 fully constructed with residents living in them. Residents within the community do not have to pay city taxes. There are covenants and guidelines for the neighborhood that homebuyers must follow while designing their home and after moving in. The neighborhood is surrounded by protected forest near Falls Lake. Bost Custom Homes has been in business for 35 years. The company has also built homes in a nearby gated community, Norwood Ridge, which has 19 custom homes starting at $2 million. Million-dollar home developments have grown in number in the Triangle over the years. High-income residents coming from California, New York, and other states have increased the demand for larger, more luxurious homes. Homes above $1 million in Chatham County are in high demand despite the housing market cooling as mortgage rates climb. The founding at Blue Ridge is a 19-home development near UNC Rex Hospital in Raleigh that is under construction, with homes expected to be priced above $1 million. Nottingham, a luxury development near Banbury Park in Raleigh with homes starting at $1 million, has just one home left for sale. Nottingham was developed by Apex-based Concept 8 Holdings. Pocket Listing represents new construction, particularly luxury homes that have a price point above $1 million. It has an office in Miami and in Cary. Durham startup scores deal in fight against climate change. Through a partnership with a global agricultural company, a Durham biotech has set the lofty goal of making crops more resilient to climate change. Oerth Bio recently announced a collaboration with Yara International, a Norwegian agricultural company, with annual revenue of $16.6 billion, to develop products that can make plants more resilient to escalating climate stresses affecting crop production. Farmers are dealing with drought, rain, heat, and cold that they haven't dealt with before, says Oerth CEO John Dombrowski. Through this collaboration, Oerth will use its research and development platform to discover, build, and test molecules that ultimately help farmers' crops survive specific climate-related stressors. The Durham Biotech is providing research services in this partnership on solutions that could ultimately lead to commercial products for Yara, but only if the solution is proven to work on the farm. The bar for us is, if you're seeing this climate experience condition, you can use this product and it will help your plant survive this stressor, Dombrowski says. This collaboration with Yara is the first major partnership that Oerth has landed since it launched in October 2019. Oerth was formed through a partnership between the German chemical giant Bayer and a pharma company in Connecticut called Arvinas that's developing a new class of drugs based on targeted protein degradation. By creating Oerth, the two companies wanted to take Arvinas' drug technology and apply it to agriculture to create new crop protection solutions. Since launching with $55 million from Bayer, Oerth has established a platform to address areas of unmet need within crop protection and set up a headquarters in downtown Durham with 45 full-time employees. And that article was written by Zach Ezone. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the OnTech Aviation page written by Lauren Onasorge. New airline at RDU will target Florida. Avalo Airlines to add 6 routes with plans for more from RDU. Avalo Airlines has picked Raleigh-Durham International Airport for its 5th base, a move that means 6 new routes and at least 50 jobs. The new routes will launch in February in all our destinations in Florida: Tampa, Sarasota, Fort Myers, Orlando, West Palm Beach, and Fort Lauderdale. Avalo CEO Andrew Levy, in town November 10 for the announcement, said initially Avalo is adding one airplane with about 50 new crew members on its payroll. The plan is to add a second airplane in the Triangle in the spring and grow to a fleet of between 5 and 7 airplanes within the next 5 to 7 years. As we add more airplanes, we'll be adding more local employment, he says. Levy said Avalo, unlike some other airlines, has not had trouble staffing up. We have not had that issue at all, not even one little bit, he says. Earlier this year, Houston-based Avalo made its RDU debut with a nonstop to New Haven, Connecticut, billed by officials as a less congested entry point to New England than Boston's Logan International Airport. In August, the airline doubled down on RDU, announcing plans to add a nonstop flight to Fort Myers beginning in November. The plan was delayed due to Hurricane Ian's devastating impact on the Fort Myers area. Southwest waves more nonstops out of RDU. Southwest Airlines is executing its comeback at Raleigh-Durham International Airport, and that could soon mean more nonstops in addition to its recently announced flight to New Orleans. Michael Cole, Senior Director of Capacity Planning for Southwest, tells Triangle Business Journal that Southwest's operation out of RDU is about 70% restored from the pandemic, but he says there are very real challenges in expanding the network, and that includes an ongoing pilot shortage impacting virtually every major carrier. So far, Southwest is pleased with its overall comeback progress at RDU, where it usually sees load factors at 85 to 90%. Our flights are pretty full, Cole says. As the pilots come back, I fully expect us to get back to pre-pandemic where we were in Raleigh, Cole says. The only thing holding us back right now is we also want to make sure we have a reliable operation, he says. No one wants to get a flight that is delayed or just doesn't operate. It's making sure we can be consistent with our customers in Raleigh. Raleigh FinTech acquired by California firm Finmark, a Raleigh-based fintech backed by American Express and Idea Fund Partners, is being acquired by California-based financial automation software firm Bill, B-I-L-L. Financial details were not disclosed, but Lister Delgado, managing partner of Finmark backer Idea Fund Partners in Durham, says investors were very happy with the terms. The team did a great job building an incredible platform, he says. We were not looking to sell, but the offer was too good to pass up. The deal is set to close by the end of the calendar year. And finally, Tiny Earth Toys adds capital, plans to grow. Raleigh startup Tiny Earth Toys has added another $1.6 million to its coffers just in time for the holidays, its second outside capital raise for founder Rachel Classy, who closed on $1.5 million to really roll out the concept in 2021. Tiny Earth Toys, which offers age-appropriate, sustainable toys that families return to receive the next box of hit toys, is a company with two missions. Yes, it hopes to entertain children with enriching toys, but it's also hoping to help families and landfills cut down on waste. After a child has finished fully playing with a toy, it's sent back instead of piling up in the corner of a playroom and eventually finding its way into a landfill. And now we turn to the On Greater Triangle Growth page, written by Evan Hoopfer. Tech investment helps Roxborough Bank grow. One small bank dominates in Person County. Roxborough Savings Bank boasts a nearly 41% market share for deposits in Roxborough. According to data from the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, that means the small bank of 33 employees beats out financial heavyweights like Wells Fargo, First Horizon Bank, and Truist Bank in its hometown market. No other bank in Roxborough has a market share greater than 18%, according to FDIC data as of June 30. Keith Epstein, CEO of Roxborough Savings Bank, credits investments the company has made in its technology as a big reason why the bank has grown deposits by 42% and assets by 29% in less than 4 years. The bank has over $240 million in deposits. "We were a little behind the curve by our own admission," Epstein says of the bank's technology. Roxborough Savings Bank, a mutual savings bank, turns 100 years old next year and has spent its century in existence financing the needs of Person County residents and businesses. Epstein says the bank lends in Person and adjacent counties, Durham, Granville, Orange, Caswell, and Alamance, with the occasional loan in Wake County. After years of its population declining, Person County is starting to attract more investments from home builders who see potential in Roxborough and surrounding towns as the Triangle's growth continues to march north. Epstein is experiencing firsthand the growth starting to emerge in Roxborough. "It is not to the extent you've seen in Johnston County, Chatham County, where there have been some huge wins there," Epstein says. "We are all on the tail end of the development that has begun to occur outside the Triangle proper, Wake, Durham, and Orange counties, and I think we're ripe for it, poised for it, and ready for it." New homes on Wake Johnston Line to start in the 300,000s offer country charm. A new residential community straddling the Wake Johnston County border plans to start selling homes under $400,000, an elusive price point in this hot area of the Triangle. Madamy Homes purchased 100 acres in Wendell for $2.5 million, according to a deed filed November 2nd. About 60 acres sit in Johnston County with the other 40 in Wake County. The land sits between Buffalo and Turnip Seed Roads. On the land, Madamy, spelled M-A-T-T-A-M-Y, is planning to build a new community called The Grove at Gin Branch, says Renee Carlson, director of marketing for the company's Raleigh division. The community will feature 76 single-family home sites with prices starting in the upper 300,000s. And finally, developer buys 200 acres in Sanford. Helix Ventures, based in Raleigh, purchased 213.15 acres in Sanford next to Raleigh Executive Jetport for $7.155 million, according to three deeds filed October 24. Helix is active in the Triangle development scene. In the past, the company has partnered with the town of Holly Springs to help land Fujifilm Diosynth Biotechnologies and Amgen at Helix's two life sciences parks in the town. Fujifilm and Amgen will bring hundreds of jobs to Holly Springs over the coming years. "With this purchase, we are expanding our partnership with Sanford and Lee County to drive economic development and create new jobs," says Jonathan Keener, principal of Helix Ventures. And now we turn to the On Retail Restaurants page, written by Laura Bromette. Two more spots open at Smoky Hollow. J Light's second location open as Phase 2 comes to life. Following months of supply chain and labor turmoil, two more spots in Smoky Hollow have opened their doors. J Lights, a second location from local entrepreneur Jared Burton, and Milk Lab are now open. Both spots are in the second phase of the project. The two establishments bring the count of open tenants to three. Dose Yoga and Smoothie Bar opened earlier this year. Six more announced tenants remain in the planning or construction stages, with nine more spaces left to fill. The project is a partnership between Kane Realty, Williams Realty and Building Company, and Lionstone Investments. J Lights is the sister concept to Burton's J Lights Marketing Cafe in Durham's Golden Belt campus. The Smoky Hollow location will serve coffee, breakfast, lunch, dinner, and alcoholic drinks from its corner location. Burton announced the new location last September, but hit a wall at the beginning of the year when the project lost its financing. That difficulty, compounded on top of existing industry struggles, including costs of goods rising, labor shortages, and an uncertain customer attitude as Omicron raged on. Milk Lab was founded in 2017 and now has four locations and a fifth coming soon to the Durham Food Hall. Its menu features various tea drinks, including milk tea, fruit tea, and boba, and rolled ice cream. Three new tenants were recently announced for Smoky Hollow: Wilmington's new Anthem Beer Project, Heat Studios, and Hush Hair Lash Brow. Midwood Smokehouse, a Charlotte-based concept from restaurateur Frank Skybelli, is on the verge of opening. The Crunkleton, a classic cocktail bar with locations in Charlotte and Chapel Hill, has also been announced as a Smoky Hollow tenant. Still in the earlier stages of planning is Madre, a tapas concept from local Tyler Helixson, an owner in Happy and Hale. Chick-fil-A model opens new drive-thru spot in Midtown Raleigh. A new Chick-fil-A restaurant was scheduled to open November 17 in Raleigh's Midtown, but the location will be drive-through only. The restaurant is situated in Midtown's retail mecca area, which includes Wegmans, Trader Joe's, and Costco. The new spot, located at 651 East Six Forks Road, is also within walking distance of Ashley Christensen's rival concept, BB's Crispy Chicken. The Chick-fil-A will be open for drive-through service and will also accept orders for carryout or delivery on the Chick-fil-A app or online. The new restaurant brings the Atlanta-based company's total count in the Triangle market to more than 50. And finally, public drinking could come to Wendell. Following in the footsteps of the two largest cities in the Triangle, Wendell is eyeing an open container drinking district. In Wendell, the district would cover much of the town's historic downtown area, says Matt Garner, economic development specialist for the town. The mapped area spans about three blocks. Wendell, a town of about 11,000 people, began looking into the social district concept in July after Raleigh and Wilson introduced their versions, Garner says. Since then, the group has been working to collect community feedback in the form of public meetings and a survey. So far, the public online survey shows 80% of respondents in favor of creating a social district. And now we turn to the On Real Estate page, written by Kaylee Thompson. Developer expects construction in 2025. Seaboard train station project to feature two towers. The Seaboard train station development in Raleigh is moving forward with plans for new towers and the train station to be relocated. After agreeing to save the train station and receiving rezoning approval for 707 Seamart Drive, developer Turnbridge Equities of New York moved quickly to file site plans with the city. The development will be two towers, with the train station shifted to the northern part of the property, which is off Peace Street. Site plans show the residential portion will have 680 total units, with a mix of studios and 1, 2, and 3-bedroom units. There will be 26,641 square feet of amenities, 11,826 square feet of retail space, and a 270,700 square foot parking garage. Providing variety in residences is important. Everybody has different needs, says Turnbridge Managing Director Jason Davis. The cost for the project will be approximately $200 million, according to Davis. Turnbridge estimates starting construction in 2025. There will be two phases, with Phase 1 delivering 300 residential units and half the parking garage and taking 2 years to complete. Phase 2 will take another 2 years to complete after Phase 1. The relocation of the train station that dates to 1942 will be a months-long process. Originally, Turnbridge was going to demolish the historic train station, but after public pushback, the company agreed to save the station and relocate it on the property. If the company does not preserve at least 50% of the building or relocate it, development will be restricted to seven stories, effectively killing the project. Davis says they will add a modern back-of-house structure to the train station while maintaining the former ticketing and waiting area. In addition, a public plaza will be added to the northern end of the project to allow the train station to have space separating it from the towers. Turnbridge wanted to ensure the station did not become embedded into the tower development. The southern end will also have a public plaza where the platform canopies will be preserved and used for future public events and programming. Retail is set to open up into that space. Luxury apartments, retail coming to town. Dominion Realty Partners announced its new partnership with landowner and entrepreneur Jeff Peterson to develop Peterson Station at Sunset Lake, a $90 million multifamily development at the corner of Sunset Lake and Stevenson Roads, northeast of downtown Holly Springs. The multifamily community will have 316 luxury apartments and 43,000 square feet of ground-level retail. Construction on the development at 8811 Stevenson Road started on November 8. Dominion Vice President Ryan Mulligan says the first units are expected to deliver by third quarter of 2024 with a completion date of early 2025. The market-rate apartments will be a mix of studio, one, two, and three bedrooms across seven buildings. The retail portion will be neighborhood-style, featuring local restaurants, coffee shops, service retailers, and eventually studio fitness retailers. New project plan for Franklin Street. A major player in the Triangle's life sciences market is planning a new development in downtown Chapel Hill, adding to the dramatic changes reshaping the area. Longfellow Real Estate Partners presented the development proposal November 11 during a meeting of the Town's Council Economic Sustainability Committee. The project at 306 West Franklin Street will be a lab and office building with the potential for retail space. Longfellow officials said there is currently no plan to include residences. Specific details on size and office space, as well as an estimated cost for the development, haven't been set, Longfellow officials said. The development is still in the early stages as several design concepts are being proposed. And finally, in a section called Snapshot, there's a picture of the outside of the Durham police headquarters. The former police headquarters in Durham is still in limbo as plans to redevelop it stall out. It will cost more than $17 million to restore the building, leaving city officials hesitant to move forward with redevelopment plans. Two proposals from two different developers were rejected by the city this summer, leaving local officials with no plans for the future of the building. And now we turn to the On Healthcare and Higher Education page written by Zach Ezone. Chimerix to investor, no way on liquidation. New York hedge fund says Chimerix should wind down operations. A Durham biopharmaceutical company is facing pressure from an investor that's calling on it to move toward liquidation. New York hedge fund Rubric Capital Management is urging the Chimerix board of directors to wind down operations and explore strategic alternatives for the company's lead clinical asset. Rubric, which has an 8.5% stake in the company, says Chimerix is on the wrong path and is being frivolous with shareholder value in a letter released November 10. Chimerix pushed back. We do not believe a liquidation of Chimerix is in the best interest of all of our shareholders, as it would deprive them of the significant upside potential of lead program ONC-201 and our other assets. Chimerix said, it would also be irresponsible to patients with this deadly disease as it would halt critical progress on ONC-201 simply as a means to appease a shareholder making such demands. Chimerix in September completed the sale of its sole commercial asset, a smallpox treatment called Tembexa, to Maryland's Emergent BioSolutions for $238 million up front, with the potential to earn up to an additional $136.5 million in milestone plus royalties. The company believes the funding from this transaction and other deals related to Tembexa could support Chimerix through potentially a regulatory approval and commercial launch of ONC-201. The company plans to launch a Phase 3 study for ONC-201, intended to treat a rare brain tumor that mostly affects children and young adults, later this month. The company is also meeting with the U.S. Food and Drug Administration in the fourth quarter to discuss an accelerated approval path that would allow the drug to reach the market prior to completing the Phase 3 study. But obtaining access to this quicker regulatory path is becoming more difficult. In its letter, Rubric said Chimerix, continuing to invest in ONC-201 despite the likely need for an expensive Phase 3 trial is not an appropriate course of action for a company of this size and with such an onerous cost of capital. Instead, the investor urges the company's board of directors to find a partner to carry the clinical program forward and return cash to Chimerix shareholders. The stock closed November 9 at $1.81 a share. Since then, it has ticked up to $2.05 on November 14, but the stock is down nearly 70% from the beginning of the year. Following layoffs, gene therapy firm leaves Durham. Months after discontinuing its clinical programs and initiating widespread layoffs, a gene therapy company has shed its footprint in the Triangle. Cyo Gene Therapies disclosed in a November 10 earnings report that the company has terminated its lease for laboratory and office space in Durham. CEO David Nassif says the company has no operations or workforce left in North Carolina. Cyogene, formerly known as Axovant Gene Therapies, signed a lease in 2019 for office space in Durham that was set to expire this month. Last year, Cyogene entered a lease agreement for lab and office space in Durham through 2024, according to securities filings. The company is paying $700,000 for the early lease termination and is losing an additional $600,000 on sales of equipment and furniture related to the office closure. Cyogene has also terminated a lease agreement for office space in New York, where the company is headquartered. Prior to terminating its Triangle lease, the biotech previously listed both New York and Durham in the datelines of its press releases and announcements. These moves follow the biotech in April, announcing its termination of license agreements for two assets under development, a significant reduction in headcount, and a potential sale. As of June 3, Cyogene had 12 full-time employees, which is down from 42 in April 2021. Nassif declines to disclose the size of the company's North Carolina workforce prior to initiating layoffs. And finally, Redhill gives up lead drug to settle debt. A Raleigh drug maker will likely be searching for sources of capital to keep operations going as it is set to give up the rights to its lead commercial asset and major revenue generator in order to settle a 2-year-old credit agreement. Redhill Biopharma has reached a non-binding agreement with HCR Collateral Management to extinguish all debt obligations in exchange for rights to Redhill's lead drug, Movantik, used to treat constipation caused by prescription pain medicines. The transaction, which is expected to close by the end of the year, means Redhill will lose its primary source of revenue and will need to secure new sources of capital or potentially cease operations, the company says. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook, written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor-in-chief of Triangle Business Journal. The headline, Things to Look For in Raleigh's New City Council. In the end, Raleigh elected current mayor Marianne Baldwin again, but she got less than half of the total votes cast in the mayoral race. However, percentage-wise, she improved on her 2019 performance. A year ago during COVID, at a time when elections were delayed by a year, one could argue she probably would have gotten as much as 55% of the total. So what happened? Missing middle happened. People thinking Baldwin is in the pocket of Barnhill Contracting, her ex-full-time employer, happened, and some people believing that Baldwin will never push back on Raleigh super developer John Kane happened. And on top of everything, the Wake County Democratic Party did not endorse her. All of these issues came to the forefront this year, and with it came the growing chatter of change. If the election were held even 6 months later, Baldwin could have lost, especially if the anti-Baldwin group grew larger and improved on their resources. Instead, we now have 4 new council members, with many of them insisting that the Citizens Advisory Councils, or CACs, need to be a part of the process to get Raleigh residents engaged in important projects that require city council votes. Led by Baldwin, the city council dissolved all 19 CACs in 2020. It's not clear whether the new class will find 2 additional votes to adopt the CACs back into the fold, but one thing is clear. Things are likely going to be different from the 7-1 votes Baldwin enjoyed through much of her tenure. So how will it look for local businesses and developers building office buildings, apartments, retail centers, and entertainment complexes across the city's parameters? For the most part, all four of the newly elected council members consider themselves progressives. New District A council member Mary Black wants a climate and equity review in her first 100 days. District B's new council representative Megan Patton took over the city council's most aggressive dissenter, David Cox's seat. He's the one in the 7-1 votes. Cox endorsed Patton, so it will be interesting to see how she approaches rezoning discussions. And the District D representative will now be Jennifer Harrison, who took over Stormy Forte's district after Forte decided to run as an at-large candidate, and she won. Harrison is an environmental economist who is passionate about climate change issues and could be leading the CAC charge next month. And that leaves Christina Jones, a former CAC leader, to fill up the council chamber on behalf of District E, David Knight's seat. Jones attended every city council meeting after the CACs were disbanded in 2020. Now she will be behind the desk on the other side. Developers will be jumping the gun if they believe the Raleigh City Council is now made up of anti-growth members. For one, even if all the new council members voted together as a block, it will not be enough to pass or fail. They would need an additional vote from the incumbents or the mayor herself to move things forward. But developers can expect one thing regardless, more scrutiny regarding environmental, energy, and affordability objectives tied to the projects, whether it be rezoning for bigger development or an application to change the use of an existing building. Baldwin has to lead and govern this time. It's not going to be a 7-1 council. She will have to reach out to other members, listen to their concerns, and provide solutions. The new council members are ready to go and want to make their presence known. Maybe giving them a couple of wins initially will set the tone for the rest of the year. And about those 40-story projects still on the drawing boards? With the capital markets running dry, this may be a good time to just wait and see how the new council members interact with each other. And that leads us to this week's Business Pulse survey. The question, will Raleigh's new city council be good for business developers? The total number of responses was 123. 47% say time will tell. 26% say it's unlikely. 15% say yes, they will work with the business community. While 12% say we need to hit the brakes on growth. And with our seconds remaining, we're going to go ahead and stop there as we've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.